Here to help us sort through the great, the not-so-great, and the just-plain bad movies of 2011 are two film critics. Mary Poles, she reviews movies for Time Magazine and is a native of this great state. Also with us, Garen Daly, movie programmer for Brunswick's independent art house, The Evening Star. We hope you'll join the conversation. What was your favorite film of the year? Which do you regret paying your hard-earned money to see? Let us know. Email us at talk@mpbn.net or post a comment on our Facebook page. You can also give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Garen, Mary, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Let's start right off the bat. Mary, favorite movie of the year?
Okay, well, I have to say that, you know, the top 10 list shifts constantly in December. I mean, you know, one is due on December 9th and you're plugging it in and sending it off. And then on December 11th, it shifts again as you see something else. I watched a couple movies last night and something shifted again. And actually, the movie that I thought I was going to walk in here and tell you would be my favorite was The Artist. But there was a ringer. And it was something that completely surprised me because I essentially loathe the filmmaker, Lars von Trier. But Melancholia, that was my number one movie.
Huh, tell us a little bit about that film.
Well, it's an apocalyptic story. And I actually think that I could have done a list of top five films of the year doing only apocalyptic stories. You know, we had Take Shelter, Contagion, you could sort of argue is that way. Margin Call, you could argue, is at least the Wall Street apocalypse. But Melancholia is one of those stories where the world actually gets it. There is another planet headed our way. And instead of Will Smith saving us, it actually hits us. But the first part of the movie is a wedding. A long, beautiful wedding scene with Kirsten Dunst being a bride who really shouldn't have gotten married. And it all takes place in this gorgeous estate, you know, on the seaside. Charlotte Gainsbourg plays her sister. Kiefer Sutherland plays her angry brother-in-law. Stellan Skarsgård plays her unhappy groom. It's a really beautiful, crazy, twisted movie.
Interesting. And it's in theaters right now?
It had one of those very strange things where, you know, it comes out on video on demand on the same day it hits theaters, you know, which I find personally sort of confusing. I don't know which way to go. And I think it's probably available on DVD now, too, because it debuted at Cannes. And it was rather notorious at Cannes because Lars von Trier went on this terrible long ramble about how he really kind of was a Nazi, and he had some sympathy for Hitler. Yeah, and Kirsten Dunst was sitting next to him at this press conference just looking like, what have I done by signing up to work with this guy? But she won Best Actress. So, movie still got some love, even though he was awful.
Which movie did it knock out of first place for you?
What was The Artist.
Garen, your top movie of the year?
I'm actually kind of surprised that you picked that one. I haven't seen it yet. But I love science fiction, and I've avoided it because every time I see a von Trier film, I like get so angry at him for being such a sloppy filmmaker and a misogynist pig. Right?
Yeah.
So I'll have to see it. Plus, I've got my science fiction film festival coming up, and I may want to put it in that. But you know what? There are a lot of good films out there, and I have to like break it down into things that I really, really enjoy, things that take me by surprise. One of them was Attack the Block, a little English film about when I tell this story to people, I say, well, do you remember in Casablanca when Humphrey Bogart is talking to Major Strasser and Major Strasser says, well, what if we walked into your beloved New York? And Humphrey Bogart says, well, there are some sections of New York you wouldn't want to walk into. That is what Attack the Block is. There's an alien invasion, and the alien invasion takes place in a very tough section of London, and the kids take on the aliens, and it's a hoot. It's not a great film, but it's a lot of fun. Huh. It's not my best film of the year, but I really enjoyed it, and I like talking about it. I think I'm going to go with Young Adult, though. I love
glad you say that. That's on my list, too.
Well, you know, first of all, Jason Reitman is a great young director. Charlize Theron, I think, takes courageous roles. And Diablo Cody has, you know, become one of the writers that I look forward to seeing her script. She did Juno. That was another great script that she did. So I like Young Adult.
We have a clip here. We'll get to it in just a second. But first, I want to remind everyone you're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Join our conversation about the films of 2011. Give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can also email us at talk@mpbn.net or post a message on our Facebook page. So, Garen, set up this clip we have.
Well, this is a clip where Charlize Theron is with her parents. She's gone back to her hometown of Mercury, where she has decided that she's going to get her old beau back. And this is a clip where she's talking to her parents about the fact that she's back in town.
Have you seen any old friends on this visit?
Actually, I've been seeing quite a bit of Buddy.
Oh, the old beau, huh?
I remember you kids were so cute in high school.
It's funny how those initial instincts can be so right, you know? I mean, you make all these mistakes along the way, but the world will make sure you end up with the person you're meant to be with.
It's good to keep those people in your life, the people who really know you best.
Mm-hmm.
And that new baby of his is just darling.
Have you seen it? Up close?
Well, that's the humor of this. It's so sick and twisted and dry, where she is like, you know, diminishing this baby's looks so that she can somehow get back her old boyfriend who has really no desire to be with her.
Any other surprises this year for you?
I just have to say about that one that, and then that same conversation, she tells her parents, I think I'm an alcoholic, and they laugh. You know, that's the tenor of this movie. Other surprises for me, I just want to talk a little bit about this movie Margaret, which has gotten a lot of sort of after-the-fact press. It's Kenneth Lonergan. He directed You Can Count on Me, which is my favorite movie about siblings. And it was bogged down in litigation for 5 or 6 years. It was shot in 2005. It stars Matt Damon, Anna Paquin, who gives an incredible performance and should be getting nominated for an Oscar if there were any justice in the world. But because of all the litigation, there were all these arguments about cuts. And, you know, at one point, Scorsese came in to help Lonergan edit it. And it just kind of got dropped in the marketplace for a week. And I reviewed it very favorably, even though there are things that are wrong with this movie. It's what's good about it is so fantastic. The acting is incredible. And the sort of look it takes at our world today is really powerful. But now there's been this movement to get the movie re-released, to make sure it gets in critics' hands. And it is making some top 10 lists. It did make mine, or my preliminary top 10 list. And I think it's going to stay on there.
One.
Yeah. It's not available on DVD yet. When it is, I hope people will make an effort to see it. It's very smart.
That's Mary Poles. She's film critic for Time magazine and author of the memoir Accidentally on Purpose. You can find her reviews at time.com. Garen, a movie that I think surprised some people this year was The Help, which did pretty well. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, it's based on the very popular novel. It's a story that takes place in the 60s, early 60s, about a young white woman who has graduated from college, and she wants to write a book, and she decides to write about the relationship that she had with her black nanny and then all the other nannies and black help in Jackson, Mississippi during that period. It is a film that struck one of the quadrants of demographics that Hollywood tends to ignore. And for your listeners who don't know, Hollywood divides the demographics of moviegoers into four sections: male under 25, male over 25, female under 25, female over 25. This is a female over 25, which is a really underserved demographic from Hollywood. And for a film to be successful in Hollywood's terms, one of the demographics has to be very much involved in it. And again, female over 25, bringing other people along with it to the movie. So bringing their husbands, their boyfriends, and then going seeing it again. And if you take a look at some other films that have done very well, the Twilight series, because young tween women love it, the Harry Potter, because young men like it.
And young women.
And
old women.
Well, they're not exclusive, but
I got a dog named Gryffindor.
But anyway, so it did a really good job. And what's great is the ensemble acting and wonderful acting from Octavia Spencer and from Viola Davis and from
Jessica Chastain.
Bryce Dallas Howard, who was getting a lot of acclaim, and I think her role was kind of shrill.
It was shrill, but she was awfully good at being shrill.
Yeah. But it's great. Really good.
We have a little clip from that, and I believe this is with Octavia Spencer.
Right. This is when to set up this clip. This is when she has actually decided that she's in on doing this book with the young white woman.
All right. Let's take a listen.
I'm going to do it. But I need to make sure she understands this ain't no game we playing here. Slide your chaff under that table. Face me. I need to see you square on at all times. I got to come up with your questions, too?
Oh.
Let's begin with where you were born. Belzona, Mississippi, on my great auntie's sofa.
Mary, do you enjoy that movie as well?
I did. I mean, I feel it's one of those feel-good, feel-bad movies where you're supposed to cry and you know you're supposed to cry and you do it and you know, maybe you feel just a little bit annoyed with yourself for losing it. But it, for me, it was all about Viola Davis. I mean, the power in that performance. And it was – I know it was such a controversial movie. And there were many people that felt like, oh, you know, so these are the roles for black actresses in America. This is it. You know, we got to go back to the oppressed 60s for this. And I understand that completely, but I cannot deny that – Viola Davis gave an incredible performance. I mean, she should also be Oscar nominated this year. I hope she will be.
I think absolutely too. I actually do have some. I mean, first of all, I'm really glad that the film came out because I really think that it gives us a chance to talk about a topic that we don't talk about, and that is race. But the fact is that it takes place 40 years ago. Makes it easier for us to talk about it because we can't talk about it right now. If that was a film that took place right now, I think we'd have a hard time finding it even on the radar. And the other part of it that is I found somewhat objectionable to is how come it's always a young white person or a white person who is bringing the black people along to be able to achieve what they need to achieve? That seems to be how Hollywood needs to have a white person as the emotional anchor.
Always. Yes.
Rather than having a black person be the emotional anchor.
But that being said, she gave a great performance nonetheless.
Oh, and Octavia Spencer's performance I thought was she came out of nowhere, and it's you know, I love the performances in it. It's great acting, and I like the fact that the film does talk about it. But there are things that when we discuss its issues, we should be expanding upon those issues because I think that is what makes the film part of our national conversation.
This is the Maine Broadcasting Network. I'm Jonathan Smith. Today we're talking about movies. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can email us at talk@mpbn.net or leave a comment or question on our Facebook page. When we come back, we'll get to your calls and comments. For our guest in the studio, Mary Poles. She's a native of this great state and film critic for Time magazine. She's also author of the memoir Accidentally on Purpose. You can find her reviews at time.com. We've also posted on our Facebook page her 10 worst movies of the year so far, I guess. Still a few more days. Also with us, Garen Daly. He's a movie critic as well, film festival organizer and blogger. He's the movie programmer for Brunswick's independent art house, The Evening Star. Stay with us.
On a tiny Pacific island, a quiet celebration of light brings new hope to a group of desperate men.
And a troubled young woman suffers a tragic loss, yet also finds her way to a new and rewarding life. I'm Murray Horwitz.
And I'm Susan Stamberg. Hear those stories and more this year on Hanukkah Lights from NPR.
Join us for that this evening at 7 o'clock. For a complete listing of holiday programs, visit our website, mpbn.net.
Next time on The World, the Soviet Union. Its founders promised a workers' paradise. By the 1980s, it had more missiles, planes, and tanks than the U.S.
The Soviet Union was competitive in one sector, which was this military economy, but at the price of destroying the rest of the economy.
The collapse of the Soviet Union. We mark the 20th anniversary on The World.
Join us for The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Jonathan Smith. You're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. With me today in the studio, Mary Poles. She's film critic for Time magazine. Also with me, Garen Daly. He's a movie programmer for Brunswick's independent art house, The Evening Star. And we're talking movies. We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We did get a couple of emails and Facebook messages already. Somebody wrote in saying that, hang on, let me grab my right paper here. Very disappointed with Werner Herzog's Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Did either of you see that?
You saw it, didn't you, Gary?
Yeah, I did. It was actually a disappointing year for documentaries all over.
And that was in 3D, correct?
It was in 3D. There's one coming up pretty soon called Pinya by Wim Wenders, which is a dance one, which is really well done. And there's some techniques that I really liked in it, but it's not going to do a lick of business. But, you know, there are very few documentaries that did really well this year. I think Buck was probably the biggest one. And, again, I can
see... The Interrupters, which is not on the short list for Oscar nominations. It's a great documentary.
Yeah. The Greatest Movie Ever Sold didn't do much business.
No, that was kind of silly.
It was kind of silly.
It was. Tabloid was great.
Tabloid was good, and Page One was pretty good. If you wanted to take a look inside the New York Times.
Right? And Bill Cunningham, too, also another New York Times documentary, the cool old photographer who takes the fashion pictures.
Right.
Yeah. Let's go back to Buck for a minute. I'm not familiar with that film. Tell us about that.
Well,
we have a clip.
Buck is a story about a horse whisperer. And, in fact, when the movie, was it The Horse Whisperer that Robert Redford was in?
Is yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
He was
young Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. He was the actual reason that movie was made. He was somebody who was called the Horse Whisperer.
He was one of them.
Right.
But the guy had written a book about a number of horse whisperers, and he was one. Yeah.
Right, but he was the technical advisor on the film.
He came in to help them,
And what it is that he is someone who understands horses very, very well. But through his understanding of horses, he understands, or you get to know their owners as well. And that's what this whole story is about, how troubled people have troubled horses and how he was a troubled youth who finds his solace through helping horses.
He was an abused youth. And it's actually a very inspiring story because it takes a while to get to that, to find out that he has a terrible history of being beaten by his father and lost his mother very young. And he was a little boy horse performer, basically. He and his big brother
did rope tricks,
and they were an act. They were known around the West. He's also, I have to say, a very sexy man.
I didn't find that. That was something that didn't turn me on.
In a movie, Jeff Bridges would play him. If it were a feature film, Jeff Bridges could play him. You know,
exactly. Let's take a listen. We've got a little clip here.
It's all I ever wanted to be was a cowboy. I grew up as a trick roper. My dad beat us unmercifully for not putting on a perfect performance. Horses are my life, and because of some of the things I'd been through as a kid, when something is scared for their life, I understand that. All your horses are a mirror to your soul. And sometimes you might not like what you see in the mirror.
Watch out!
You can't hold it against him for kind of how his life has been. Maybe there's some things for you to learn about you. Maybe the horses is going to be the only damn way you're going to learn it.
Yes, I understand that every life must end.
Now, let's go. I want to go back to the Cave of Forgotten Dreams for a second and the 3D aspect. This, my understanding, was the year that was either going to make or break 3D. And I got the sense early in the year, everybody frowned upon 3D.
Yeah.
But then a couple different things we have. We have Hugo, which people said was done brilliantly. Tintin.
It's a wonderful film. For anyone who loves film, really have to go see Hugo.
Tintin as well, getting good reviews, good use of the 3D technology. But the thing that surprised me the most was The Lion King. Talk about...
Oh.
What they did with that. I mean, that was a movie that came out 10 years ago.
Yeah,
not in 3D.
I know.
Well, what they did is they went back and you can retrofit a film into 3D, and that's exactly what they did with The Lion King. And so what Disney did with this was they decided that they were going to release it on a new Blu-ray disc. So they decided that they would make this a program, a promotional piece for the new DVD, so they did it in 3D with the idea of a limited 2-week engagement. They brought it out, and all of a sudden, it went through the roof. And it made more money than people could possibly imagine. And all of a sudden, everyone's going, who knew that old films were so good?
Yeah, I mean, of course, the irony is that if you really want a great 3D experience, you're not going to a film that's been doctored to be turned into 3D. You want to see one that's actually shot for 3D, like Hugo.
Right.
Which is the first film I have ever regretted not paying for the 3D.
3D. Huh.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting there thinking, this is a gorgeous movie. Wouldn't it be better if I was seeing it in 3D? And I'm with Roger Ebert on the whole, like, oh, I don't want to talk about 3D. It's just a way to extract more money out of customers.
Well, I mean, you've hit him on something very powerful there. And the first thing is that globally, 3D is enormous. I mean, it is enormous. It is driving the market. This year was the first year that there were more money being made globally than domestically by a tune of 70% to 30% in some cases. So as far as Hollywood is concerned, even though box office is way down in the States, it is enormous in the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, and that's going to continue so that Hollywood's going to see continued growth. The other thing is that with Lion King, you're now going to see Titanic in 3D, Beauty and the Beast is coming out January 13th in 3D, Pixar films are being slated to come out in 3D, the Star Wars trilogy, again, is coming out in 3D.
Oh, God, I mean, not another version.
I mean, Lucas must need a new estate or something because he's doing it. But
another mountaintop.
But what it also says is that people are going to feel more comfortable going to a film that they know is going to be good. And they know that Lion King was good. That's why they went. They wanted to go to have that experience again. It's like seeing an old friend.
That's Garen Daly. He's movie critic, film festival organizer, and blogger. Also with us is Mary Poles, film critic for Time Magazine. Let's go to the phones now. We've got Mary from Sullivan calling. Hello, Mary. Are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi. Did you have a comment or question?
Yes, I do. I think there's too much emphasis on young people in the movies. They're making so many movies, and they're good, but there are a huge population of us out here that are over 50, and there are so few movies being made for people who, of a certain age, you might say. I saw The Help, which I thought was excellent, but it was, you know, this is our art form, really. This is the movies, the film is our art form in this country. And I think we ought to respect and at least have more of a variety and more movies, you know, geared to people who are a little mature, because we're here, you know, we're out here.
Well, there's Midnight in Paris.
Thank you, Mary.
I mean, I did you see that, Mary, I wonder? I feel like every time I go to a Woody Allen movie, I'm the youngest person there, and I feel like Midnight in Paris is Woody Allen's best movie in years.
I think that just came out on DVD, correct?
Yeah, it did. Now. And, you know, I mean, she has a great point. It's the quads again. I mean, there's no quad for people over 65, but clearly, you know, I mean, I go to the dog park with retirees, and they always want to know what's good. We always talk about what they might like to see. And, you know, for them, maybe I would say The Descendants. I would definitely say The Artist. You know, and this is going to sound stupidly ageist, but The Iron Lady, the Meryl Streep's great.
Is that out yet?
It's coming soon. It's New York and L.A. Qualifying.
The Beginners would be another one.
Oh, Beginners is lovely.
Yeah.
Completely lovely.
You know, it's interesting because what Mary said is very, very true. Hollywood for the past decade and a half has put all its money into boys under 25, which is why you see the Batmans and the Star Wars and all these other films coming out that appeal to that demographic. Now the boys are no longer going to the megaplexes, which is one of the reasons why the industry in the United States is down and will be down 5-6% by the end of this year. And they're like scratching their heads going, what happened? Well, they've been underserving the exact demographic that Mary was talking about, which is why The Help did so well, why Bridesmaids did so well. I mean, there is a market out there, and to the people like Mary, I would say, look, you've got some great film festivals in Maine. Go to some of these film festivals where you see some films, and you've got some great independent art houses who are looking for those interesting films, and sometimes you have to trust the theater itself to show you these films, and don't rely on the Hollywood marketing and advertising to tell you which films to go see.
And do go see the movies like Crazy Stupid Love,
right,
which I think are made for smart people who care about good movies. But if they don't get the love on the first weekend at the box office, then, you know.
But listen, two of the films that did very, very well this year that were surprises because they ended up, or actually more than two, but Margin Call, mm-hmm. Which was an adult film about, and probably one of the best explanations of what happened with the economic meltdown.
Who directed that? Who do you remember?
Kevin Spacey's in it, and Jeremy Irons is in it.
But it's the son of a trader who, I think his father worked at Merrill Lynch.
I think you're right.
So yeah. He knew the business.
Another one is, and I know you don't like this film, is The Way. And again, both of these films came out in May, and some of them are still in the theaters because of word of mouth.
I don't dislike it. I just didn't want to see it.
Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. 800-399-3566. Let us know your favorite movie of the year, your least favorite movie of the year, which ones you're looking forward to coming out on DVD. Again, that number is 1-800-399-3566, or send us an email, talk@mpbn.net. And talking about movies, I'm curious how you guys review movies. Are you in the theater? Are you watching them at home? Do you immediately? Are you taking notes throughout the whole process?
I take notes the whole time.
You watch it just once and then do it, or you go back over and over?
I would typically watch it just once, unless it was something that I had seen at a festival and needed to refresh myself on later on in the year. I see almost everything in the theater, which means that I go to Boston a lot because that's where the screenings are, and that's how I know Garen. Sometimes I watch things on screener. I watched Shame last night on my laptop, actually, because the DVD didn't work in my Blu-ray player. I was live streaming Certified Copy, which is a great movie from this year, and it's probably going to be on my final top 10. I was live streaming it on my computer, and then it, you know, cut out, right. And so then I watched it on DVD. So all different methods, but the primary way is to go to the theater. And, you know, the studio, if it's a comedy, if it's Bridesmaids, they want you to see it with as raucous an audience as possible. So they fill the place. And I get that. I really do. In terms of seeing something twice, I had a panic last week where I thought they were going to send me back to see Angelina Jolie's In the Land of Blood and Honey for a second time. I'd seen it in the Bosnian language with English subtitles, and there was sort of a rumor afoot that I was going to have to see the English version. And I thought, how many times can I watch women get raped in Bosnia? I mean, no, I can't see it twice. Once is enough. And Pauline Kael, who was The New Yorker's great film critic, and there was a biography about her released this year by Brian Kello. Her rule was always just once.
How about you, Garen? Quickly, we're going
to
take a break.
I also go to trade screenings, which is a little different, where it's just people in the industry, and it's usually people who are very cynical, so it's kind of interesting to get their take on it. It's all about how much money they're going to make. But I go to screenings, press screenings, and I also get to screeners as well.
That's Garen Daly. He's movie critic, film festival organizer, and blogger. He's the movie programmer for Brunswick's independent art house, The Evening Star. Also with us is Mary Poles. She's a native of this great state, film critic for Time magazine, and author of the memoir, Accidentally on Purpose. When we come back, we'll get to more of your calls. The phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
It's Handel's Messiah, next time on the New York Philharmonic this week. Happy holidays, everybody. This is Alec Baldwin inviting you to join us for a complete performance of Handel's masterpiece featuring a quartet of superb soloists plus the New York choral artists. Bernard Labadie will conduct the New York Philharmonic this week.
Join us for that program this evening at 8 o'clock. And for a complete listing of holiday programs, you can visit our website, mpbn.net.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, 2011 was the year of the Arab Spring. As the year ends, we ask where that Arab Spring really stands now. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join us for On Point tonight at midnight.
Welcome back. I'm Jonathan Smith, and you're listening to the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. In the studio with me is Mary Poles, film critic for Time magazine. Also, Garen Daly, who's the movie programmer for Brunswick's independent art house, The Evening Star. We're talking movies, the good, the bad, and the ugly of 2011. And with us on the line right now is Frederick from South Portland. Frederick, did you have a comment?
Yeah, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I wanted to ask your guests about foreign films. And I have a particular foreign film that I really adored this year, and ask about the non-formulaic approach of foreign films versus American films. So the film that I'm recommending is I Am Love. I'm wondering, it was starred Tilda Swinton. I'm wondering if your guests know of it.
I love it. I had it on my top 10 list last year, which is technically when it was released. It is gorgeous, crazy movie, isn't it? I mean, all those bugs crawling up blades of grass while Tilda Swinton rolls around in it with her young lover. It's pretty hot.
It's the most wonderful love scene I've ever seen in the film.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Everything, the music, the costumes, the setting, it feels like a vintage, it feels like a 1970s great Italian film. I know people now, didn't, I think I might be in the minority in critics in terms of loving it, because I think some people thought it was a little wacky.
Great. Frederick, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Becky now in Blue Hill. Becky, did you have a comment or question?
Oh, I just want more foreign films, and I'm wondering what the problem is. Do they not get translated? You know, what's distribution issues? I mean, I've been sort of accessing them through Netflix, but, you know, like after they've been out for 4 or 5 years over in Europe.
Becky, thank you for your call. Sort of like back to this idea of, you know, films for adults.
Well, yeah. It's film for adults, but the problem simply is that the audience isn't going out to see these films, so it's very difficult for a distributor to justify buying these films. There are some films that come through the pipe. Usually they're playing the big cities. They don't necessarily come into upcountry or out into the suburbs. And if you do have an art house near you, you know, work with the owner of that one and say, please, you know, start bringing these films and we'll bring friends. That's how you get it done. The audience has changed. And when people start complaining about Hollywood, I will place a little of that blame back on the audience for allowing it to happen. It's so much easier for them to accept a Hollywood marketed
formulaic film
because they know what they're getting. And some of it has to do with our times. But, you know, like you take something like Shame, which is Steve McQueen's new film, very challenging, NC-17, not everyone's going to like it. But at least he's approaching something and trying to talk about it on a smaller level. So, again, you have to support these filmmakers.
And actually, I would just say that one strange thing that's happened this year is that this movie, The Artist, which is actually a French film,
right,
shot in black and white, or shot in color and then transferred to black and white, and silent, is very likely to be a Best Picture nominee, a French film. I mean, and it's actually, it's the front runner to win right now. So think about that. I mean, I know it's not quite the same as an exotic Iranian film, but mm-hmm. it's a beautiful film. And I will say that I do share your frustration. It's Becky, right? Because I waited for months to get certified copy on DVD and then realized it's not coming. And it came out at Cannes in 2010. So sometimes there's just a really painful delay.
Huh. Interesting. Let's go to Luke. Luke, did you have a comment or question?
Yes, hello?
Yes. Hi, Luke. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was wondering what you guys thought of the movie J. Edgar and if you had any comment about the makeup job.
Well, what did you think of it, Luke? Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good film. I tend to like films that kind of have that historical relevance, and I didn't really know about a lot of the components of his life that were exposed in the movie. So I thought it was a good movie, and I thought Leonardo did a pretty good job as well.
Great. Luke, thank you so much for calling. What'd you think?
Luke, I have to tell you that the reason that I have ignored the two copies of that screener I have at my house is the makeup job, because every time I saw the trailer for that movie, I just felt like, I'm not buying it, people. You know, if you can't age them with makeup, or if you can't do it with computers, just back away, because I had no interest.
How about you, Garen?
It's a minor Eastwood is how I look at it. And I like some of the things that he did with, but I think Eastwood hedged so much on this. J. Edgar Hoover was a controversial figure. He was, you know, a Soviet political manipulator as anybody we ever had in our U.S. government. And he allowed the mafia to grow. But talking about the makeup, I kept looking at the makeup and looking at Leonardo DiCaprio, who does a good job, thinking Naomi Watts is wasted. And I'm looking, well, he looks like Philip Seymour Hoffman. Why didn't they just hire Philip Seymour Hoffman and not even do the makeup?
Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Let's go to probably the complete opposite extreme to Elizabeth. Elizabeth, tell us about your personal worst movie of the year.
My personal worst movie of the year, hands down, The Smurfs.
Mary, was that on your worst list?
Elizabeth, that means that you are a much nicer parent than I, because I didn't see it because I told my child that it had come and left from Brunswick before we could go to it. But I completely feel your pain just having seen the ads for that.
We both walked out on it. It's sad. I mean, my grandson's not even two, and he just, at one point, he covered his ears and looked at me like, why are we here?
Oh.
Let's leave. Because there were so many explosions and ridiculous.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
That had some big names in it.
They always do. You know? It had Neil Patrick Harris, yeah, who I love. But
it made money.
They get,
there are going to be more.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's already in the pipeline. So,
well,
you know,
I reviewed Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Lock the doors, close the windows.
The third Alvin and the Chipmunks
Elizabeth,
movie last week.
Thank you so much for calling. Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, which actually, not as bad as Zookeeper, which was on my top 10 worst movies of the year.
And you can find Mary's bottom 10 movies on our website, or on our Facebook page. Let's go to Stephen in Mars Hill. Stephen, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead. Did you have a comment or a question?
Yeah, I had a comment. I was just listening to your program. I turned it on after you started, but there was a woman that mentioned about movies for the older generation. I'm only 41, but I recently rented a movie at a local store, and it was called Meek's Cutoff.
Oh, great movie.
It was very interesting because when I went into the store, I picked it up and I thought, huh, this looks like this might be interesting, something my wife would probably like. She likes those types of what I thought, you know, looked on the cover and read on the back of it. And I get up to the counter and the woman's like, oh, no, you don't want to rent that at all. Everyone that has come in that has rented it has come back and said, that is an absolutely terrible movie. and she said, well, I'll give it to you. You can go rent another one and I'll give this to you. And when you bring it back, tell me what you thought. So I take it home and, you know, I've got four children, 10, 8, 6, and 4, and we all sat down and watched it, and we all loved it.
Oh, and, you've got great kids.
And I just looked at it, and immediately when it started, I thought, wow, this reminds me of the documentaries I used to watch when I was a boy in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is intense. You know, I, not necessarily by choice, but by circumstance, where I live is you know, we don't have electricity from the power pole, so we use a generator, and our water is gravity-fed into our cabin, and it's not this glorious thing, but we totally connected with this movie. Like, wow, we know what it means to be without, and we know what it means, how precious, you know, the commodity of water is, for example, or to just be warm or to be fed.
Paul, thanks so much for that call. Give us a little background on the movie.
Well, this is the one about the journey across the country, right?
It's the journey through Oregon.
Yeah.
And it's based on a real story. It's the director's Kelly Reichardt, who also did Wendy and Lucy, one of my favorite movies from 3 or 4 years ago. Stars Michelle Williams, who's had a fantastic year.
Yeah.
She's also fantastic in My Weekend with Marilyn. It's a beautifully slow movie. I mean, you really feel the journey. You feel every bit of sunburn on their faces, every bit of deprivation. They're lost. They have a leader who's insane. They don't know what to do. They meet a Native American who speaks no English, of course, and who might help them. It's like and it ends on a beautifully ambiguous note.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable movie, and it's on my long top 10 list.
What did you think of My Weekend with Marilyn?
I think it's a silly movie, and I read the book that it's based on, which is like silly and catty and kind of fun. But I think she gives an incredible performance.
Michelle Williams.
She is Marilyn Monroe, someone right. who she looks nothing like, really.
Right. But she captures the mannerisms very,
she
very
does.
Well.
She does. She really
she's a very good. You know, she's a really good actress.
Oh, she's a great actress. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she, you know, if you go back and you look at the original, at The Prince and the Showgirl, which it's, you know, that's what they're making in the course of My Weekend with Marilyn. She just nails it. And
yeah.
Marilyn Monroe, I mean, to me, she is perhaps the most elusive.
Enigmatic.
Yeah. I mean, to figure out why people loved her so much, I'm just young enough to not have really gotten it. But this movie and Michelle Williams made me finally get it.
You know, let's try and get in one more call. Let's go to Paul in Auburn. Paul, are you there?
Yes.
Did you have a comment or question?
Yes, I just had a quick question, sort of an offbeat question. I was wondering, from a critical eye, if your two guests, when they watch TV, were deluged with commercials, and ones that some of them, fortunately, are very comical. I was just wondering, like the Bridgestone commercials are so entertaining. I was just wondering, does your critical eye transfer to commercials? And I'll just hang up and listen to you.
Thank you for that.
I hope it does. I mean, I tend to only watch commercials during the Super Bowl now because I watch TV on Hulu. I watch Modern Family on Hulu every week, and that's about it for me. Not that I'm not a TV snob. I just don't have the time because I'm watching movies.
Well, I'm a sports fan, so I watch a lot of sports, and I get to see a lot of those sports commercials. And, you know, yes, it does. I mean, I'm tired of seeing men being portrayed as stupid idiots who don't know anything but their 12-year-old boy does. And I'm tired of seeing guys who can think of only one thing, beer, and that's how you get women.
All right. So we're just about to wrap up. Give me one must-see movie, whether it's on your top 10 or not. Let's start with you, Garen.
Boy, good question. I think I'm going to go back to Attack the Block. I think it's a great rental for people who are looking to see what's going on with young filmmakers in horror, because horror films are where young filmmakers cut their bones to be able to like start getting into bigger films.
I'm going to talk really fast and say Tree of Life, Contagion, Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, Young Adult, Weekend, The Trip.
What about Tree of Another Life. Earth?
I love Another Earth. That's
well,
on my apocalypse
with,
list.
I fell in love with Britt Marling when I interviewed
her. Well, who wouldn't unless yeah, you were
there's
dead?
There's a quick backstory on that. We've got about 15
It's another
seconds.
Apocalyptic story. There's another planet heading towards, although this one
no,
actually
this
doesn't
hit.
No,
this is not apocalyptic, but it's
yeah,
like there's
but
a
there's
duality
the fear
going
of it.
On
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like all of a sudden your doppelganger is living up in the sky.
That's Garen Daly. He's a movie critic, film festival organizer, and blogger. He's the movie programmer for Brunswick's independent art house, The Evening Star. Also with us, Mary Poles. She's a native of Maine, film critic for Time Magazine, and author of the memoir Accidentally on Purpose. You can find her reviews at time.com. Thank you both for being here today.
Thank you for
My
having
pleasure.
Us.
Today's
so
program
much fun.
Was produced by Keith Shortle. John Kimmel was on the board. We had help from the MPBN web team, and Cindy Hahn, our volunteer, did a great job answering the phones. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jonathan Smith. This is the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
Cartels.